Welcome to Jews Do Count with me, Jonathan Boyd, from the Institute for Jewish Policy Research.
And me, Raymond Simonson, from JW3, London's Jewish Community Centre.
Jews Do Count is the podcast that tries to look under the bonnet of the British Jewish community. What unites us, what divides us. And we're drawing on the latest JPR data, the recently published results of the National Jewish Identity Survey, to help ground our conversation in the most up-to-date research.
This week, our conversation is focused on a topic that, if I'm being really honest, I'm kind of sick and tired about talking about and thinking about and reading about. But it is, understandably, at the moment, the thing that is dominating conversations around Jewish boardrooms and Shabbat tables and synagogues at the moment, more than anything, which is anti-Semitism.
Yeah, I share that with you. It's really been a very draining last few months. But one of the things we can see from the research is just what a significant role it plays in people's Jewish identities, perhaps particularly in our current post-October the 7th context.
Right. Since those horrific, heinous massacres on October 7th last year, in which over 1,400 Israelis were murdered and more that were kidnapped, there's just been this huge upswing in the number of anti-Semitic incidents in this country. Actually, from the immediate days after October 7th, even before Israel's response. And we both know that the CST, the Community Security Trust, recorded over 4,000 incidents for all of last year, which is a new record. And two-thirds of those came after October 7th, which is just mind-boggling. We know that anti-Semitism has always been a feature of Jewish life anywhere, not just in Britain. We're recording this here at JW3, where we've had to have security ever since we opened 10 years ago with security guards. And from the evening of October 7th, we had to increase those even further.
One of the interesting things from a research perspective is that those CST figures very much caught the headlines. But what we also know about anti-Semitic incidents is the vast majority of them aren't reported to anybody. In our research, we found that 32% of British Jewish adults said they had experienced an anti-Semitic incident of some kind in the previous year. That's a very different figure when you calculate it than 4,000. So what the CST is picking up is, in many respects, the thin end of the wedge. This is a big issue, and it's having no question, having a big impact on Jews everywhere. It has done, I think, for some time now. But yeah, obviously, post October the 7th, we're in a different context.
And I think it's worth us saying at this point that this episode is not delving into the whys and wherefores of anti-Semitism itself. We are going to, as we do in every episode, look at this issue specifically through the lens of how it impacts on us as Jews, on our identity and us as a community. So, just, I know we've both obviously experienced anti-Semitism ourselves been involved in thinking about this stuff professionally. Can you think of some of the kind of, I don't know, formative memories or experiences you have around anti-Semitism?
Yeah, I can. I mean, the first thing I would say is actually for most of my life living in Britain, I didn't experience it at all, really. Yeah. And actually, when you look at the international data, Britain has long been one of the safest places in the world for Jews. But one incident in particular kind of struck me literally quite hard, which was in April 2002. It was just after, I don't know if you remember, in the midst of the Second Intifada,
right.
There was what was reported in the media as the Jenin massacre, where, according to the reports, hundreds of Palestinians were massacred. It turned out, actually, there was a pretty brutal battle between Palestinian forces and Israeli forces. I think the final figures were something like 54 Palestinians killed and 23 Israeli soldiers killed, including, as it turned out, a distant cousin of mine, actually.
Oh, wow. It
was the Shabbat immediately after all of that. I was walking to shul on Shabbat morning. I was wearing my kippah, and there were three or four, I'm trying to remember, white English guys walking towards me, all sort of, I guess, early 20s. And as we crossed paths, one of them just reached out and punched me right in the face.
Wow.
And then just carried on walking. You're kind of struck in the moment, just trying to figure out, what just happened. So I just turned around. My instant reaction was to turn around and say, "What was that for?" And the guy who hit me said, "That's what happens to Jews when you behave like that." So it was really my first kind of experience of physical anti-Semitism. But I think the interesting thing about it was it was very much connected to what's happening in Israel. And that relationship between what happens in Israel and what happens here is, you know, I think has been there for a long time.
Right. I'm so sorry to hear that story. And I'm so shocked because just to hear that, it's so brutal and so visceral. Look, thankfully, from my perspective, I haven't had anything like that. Where I've always encountered it is at football matches. And, you know, I've grown up as a Spurs fan. I'm still a Spurs season ticket holder.
I'm sorry about that.
Yeah. Wish me long life. but I, from the late 70s, you know, was going with my late father, my uncles, and you'd often hear things. I'm talking about whenever we played Chelsea, whenever we played West Ham, in particular those two, sometimes Leeds, I would start hearing things that weren't just, you could not excuse it in any way as harmless banter. We're talking about songs about Auschwitz, songs about Hitler's going to get you again, mm-hmm. to a jaunty little chant. Mm-hmm. This sound, and when in seasons where I sat near the away fans, you could see the Zieghiles. You could see it walking down the street when we played Lazio in a European game, and all, you know, seeing thousands of fans walking down Tottenham High Road, Zieghiling and singing those kind of songs. I saw that a lot, and I'll never forget being at an away match at West Ham and seeing a Spurs fan on the floor with about three or four West Ham fans literally kicking him in. No indication that he was Jewish or not, by the way, but what they were spewing out of their mouth was the most vile, anti-Semitic, disgusting language as they were literally kicking his head in. The postscript to that is a few years ago I was on Dispatches. Program and they were talking about homophobia, racism in the terraces, and I got interviewed, and amongst the other things I said, I told that story. And then I discovered that on Twitter there were people that were just sort of taking photos of me on the screen and posting it and calling me a lying Jewish c-word, all sorts of different expletives, but all about the fact that they didn't believe that I was calling out anti-Semitism. Quite a shock to see that.
Yeah, you know, it's really, really disturbing. The question I think we want to grapple with today is what impact anti-Semitism has on our sense of self. Right. When I think about myself in that context, I'm often, depending on the context, like hyper-conscious of the fact that I am Jewish and I need to be a little cautious in this context, a little careful, you know, just, you know, Don't draw attention to yourself. I think that's part of being Jewish, and maybe perhaps particularly part of being a British Jew. I'm not sure. To get a broader perspective on this, our producer Richard Myron has been out and about, this time outside a Jewish school in northwest London, and asking people about how anti-Semitism impacts their Jewish identities.
Truthfully, this probably isn't the right answer, but it makes me retreat slightly and shy away from being Jewish. Definitely when I'm with friends who aren't Jewish, I try to avoid any conflict or talking about what's going on in the Middle East. If someone comes to my house, like a new babysitter, sometimes I say, oh, by the way, we're Jewish, just in case. So yeah, I'm one of those people, I kind of am shying away. I'm not wearing a Magen David. I'm not outwardly, you know, saying I'm Jewish.
It's troubling that I even need to think about the fact that I'm being Jewish when I'm in society. And you can feel it at the workspace as well. And it basically make me think if it's the right decision to stay here or should I go back to Israel, because I'm from Israel originally.
And personally speaking, how does that impact your Jewish identity? Do you, for example, want to hide it more? Do you want to come out more and declare more your Jewishness?
No, it's basically the same. I am not hiding it. This is who I am. This is how I live my life. And it is what it is.
I am proud to be Jewish. And I think all this hate directed at a group of people makes me even prouder to be Jewish. But it's also, with young children, it is worrying.
Is there anything that you've done to change your behaviour or your expressions of Judaism outwardly?
I'm probably more vocal on social media to my non-Jewish friends, so I want them to understand.
I've always had quite a strong Jewish identity, so I wouldn't say it's necessarily strengthened it, but it reminds me every day now that I'm Jewish, whereas before it sort of drifts in and out of life, whereas I feel it kind of every day now.
Do you feel that as a positive thing, or is it something you feel that you want to sort of hide away more?
No, I don't want to hide away, but I feel a level of anxiety that I hadn't before. I'm going for work to Italy in a Jewish capacity for a Jewish company, and I feel quite anxious about being there, being openly Jewish, and what people are going to do or say, or, yeah. We're going through this time now, but we'll come through it and things will stabilise again, and then we'll probably go through it again.
How concerned are you about anti-Semitism at this point in time?
Pretty concerned. Concerned enough that it's making me shift my perspective from potentially sending my child to a non-Jewish secondary school to a Jewish one, so that they don't face any difficult situations or conversations or abuse in playgrounds, basically.
Have you or members of your family experienced anti-Semitism, you know, in recent times?
We haven't experienced it firsthand. A lot of it is in the minds of people. There's a lot of it that's real, obviously, but there's a lot more of it that's amplified in the minds of people and in the minds of the community, I think, than is really physically happening out there.
Do you think that something vital has changed here, that all of a sudden you're thinking, yeah, is this a safe place to be?
Yes, but I don't think there's anywhere that's necessarily better. I think it's a global thing, and we can choose to educate or reach out to the other side, Muslim community, and try and make things okay here, or we can try and run away, but there won't be anything better elsewhere.
So, as always, a really broad range of Jews, but with really different views. And I just wondered, John, if when you hear those kind of responses from people, does it chime in with what you've heard and read in the research, in the data, or is there anything there that was at odds with any of that?
No, I think it chimes very well, actually. There's clearly been something that's shifted over the course of the last few months, just looking at data that we've gathered, actually, since the National Jewish Identity Survey. So about 1 in 10 British Jews said they felt unsafe in Britain in May 2023 when we measured it. When we measured it again in November 2023, so after October the 7th, that had risen from 1 in 10 to 4 in 10.
Right. The proportion, so statistically, that's a significant increase.
It's a huge increase, particularly when you put it in the context of, I mean, there was one comment there about, is there anywhere better in the world to go? Right. And the truth is, when you look at the kind of the international data, the answer to that question is no, not really. Right. You know, on the other hand, when you measure things in the midst of a moment, you often get something of a distorted reading.
Right.
And the critical question is, what will things look like in the middle of 2024 or at the end of 2024 or into 2025?
Let me ask you about who's sort of most affected by anti-Semitism.
Yeah, I mean, two groups particularly stand out. One is Orthodox / Haredi Jews.
Visibly identifiable.
Yeah, basically anyone who's visibly identifiably Jewish. The other critical group is people in their, you know, teens and 20s. When you look at racism generally or racist incidents generally, younger people are much more likely to be victims of it than older people. You know, why is that? Because younger people are more likely to be out in city centres late at night, you know, when there are drunk people are around, right, and that's when kind of, you know, incidents happen. So that affects Jews as well.
Is that also about social media?
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Is that part of it?
That's certainly okay. Part of it as well. Yeah, younger people are much more likely to experience it online than older people.
So I need to ask you how anti-Semitism impacts on identity. Does the research tell us anything about that?
So it's really, really interesting. When we measure Jewishness, Jewish identity in a multiplicity of ways, like what's important to you about your Jewishness? Is it about Shabbat or Kashrut or God or giving of tzedakah, charitable giving, or volunteering, etc.? The idea of combating anti-Semitism as an important piece of people's Jewish identity comes very, very high up on the list. And it's become more important to a larger proportion of the British Jewish population over the course of the last 10 years as well. So it's becoming more important. It's quite widely shared across the denominational spectrum and across age bands. So it's an important piece of the jigsaw puzzle.
I find that utterly, utterly depressing.
Yeah, it's challenging, but it also, I think, reflects the reality of the world in which we live as British Jews, and particularly, I guess, the experiences we've had over the course of the last few years.
And that was data based on research that was conducted before October 7th,
correct.
So that's really worrying. So to bring us now up to date, and we are re-recording this episode because like with the episode on Israel, we recorded one just before October 7th and it quickly became irrelevant. And to help us really understand where we find ourselves now and what this really means for Jewish community and Jewish identity, we're joined by Karen Pollock, who has worked throughout her career in a number of guises on this issue and is a good friend and colleague to us both.
Yeah, and Karen is currently chief executive of the Holocaust Educational Trust, but she's worked for years in highlighting and fighting anti-Semitism, from her days in student politics to being director of the All-Party Parliamentary Group Against Anti-Semitism.
Let's just start with just asking you, just on a personal note, what part does experiences of anti-Semitism play in shaping who you are as a Jew?
Look, for me, being Jewish is about my values and about family and being part of a community, and it's spiritual too. And it's something I've grown up with and feel very privileged to have always had as part of my identity and always felt proud to have. Fighting anti-Semitism in my student days and being involved with the Union of Jewish Students means that it's always played a part in my identity. And obviously, working at the Holocaust Educational Trust, I mean, a big part of educating about the Holocaust is educating about what anti-Semitism was prior to the Holocaust and how the Nazis used all sorts of tropes that were already in existence to promote their propaganda and their ideology. But I don't like the idea that anti-Semitism is the definition of what being Jewish is. But it's very difficult right now having this conversation and not feeling that it is a big part of our identity. And I would just add one other thing, which is, I mean, I feel very much, in the throes of it. But I think many people do. And actually, that's the interesting thing. I think many people who never in the past would have thought they were caught up in this feel caught up. They feel that they have to either have a voice or do something or at least find out more and understand what's going on in a way that I wonder whether they felt that previously. I'm talking about people perhaps in their 30s and 40s who previously didn't.
So one of the interesting things in the just listening to the voices from the community was there were kind of two contrasting views. Like one person was saying that they kind of hiding away their Jewishness in some ways, and there were other voices saying, no, it's actually made me more proud, more active. How's it impacted you on that sort of spectrum?
I mean, I'm proudly Jewish and everybody knows I'm Jewish, and I've spent my life telling people I'm Jewish. At university, I studied languages, and living abroad with fellow students, none of whom were Jewish. I mean, they all learnt about Pesach and Kashrut and Shabbat, and I really loved that. I always used to joke about being a bit of like an ambassador for my community. You know, I really enjoyed it and was very proud of my identity, and I didn't feel it was anything to hide, and I still don't think it's anything to hide. I mean, I'm not stupid, so I'm vigilant, and I'm often in the area where there are protests in Westminster. I obviously don't enter it. I find a way home that goes around it. Has this shifted my strength of identity? No. Has it made me have a stronger voice? No, because I think that's always how I've been. I've just carried on.
I think you're really, unfortunately for you, you become a magnet for anti-Semitism, but you also become a bit of a magnet for other Jews, I think. Like people, like I imagine you're in lots of conversations with lots of people who are showing solidarity, Jews who are showing solidarity to you, and therefore they are maybe connecting into their own Jewish identity more. Do you get that sense that there are people for whom right now their Jewishness is being dialed up, or the opposite?
No, I'm hearing more from my circle or an even wider circle. There is more engagement and being more active. I suppose there are a couple of points I would make. The first is that being a magnet for anti-Semitism, by the way, you know, I'll put that on as my new Twitter profile. You know.
So I was trying to think of a different way of wording it. But
but it's always been bad. It's always been there. Yeah. But my WhatsApp groups and WhatsApp in general is,
I've never known anything
off
like
the scale.
Yeah.
We're in a really strange world at the moment.
I want to ask you just to reflect back a little bit over perhaps the last 10, 15 years, because part of the research that we've just produced looks at change over the course of the last 10 years. So in 2012, we did a study on Jewish people's perceptions and experiences of anti-Semitism, and we measured it across lots of different EU countries. And the thing that was really striking at that time was that we called the UK the exceptional case because levels of anti-Semitism for Jews in Britain were clearly lower and considerably lower than other places across Europe. We repeated that study in 2018, which, of course, is in the midst of the Corbyn era,
yeah.
And levels of anxiety among Jews in Britain had shot right up. Just kind of reflecting back on that period, did you see shifts in terms of, you know, how Jews were engaging with anti-Semitism? Because actually, maybe to give a little bit more context to this, one of the things we can see in our recent research is that the place of anti-Semitism in people's Jewish identity has shifted over the course of the last 10 years.
I find it difficult to think about pre-2018, I've got to say, because I feel like the Corbyn era was quite a turning point in a number of ways. Number one, it brought anti-Semitism very much into mainstream politics in a way that I think none of us ever imagined we would see. It also did, I think, galvanise our Jewish community to stand up and say enough is enough and feel a strength of voice to just say this isn't okay. And we were doing it not always with allies, we were doing it alone. And actually, I do think a lot of the anti-Semitism we're witnessing now was very much the oxygen was given those few years ago. In terms of your question, which is more about do I think, therefore, the shift of anti-Semitism being more of a defining element of being Jewish, I think it's inevitable, isn't it? Because when you feel threatened or when you feel unnerved, it crystallizes things. And I can think of a number of people I know who either, you know, one of the people is Jewish but the partner isn't, or their child is knows that they've got a Jewish parent but they're not brought up Jewish, but they go to school and they're asked, whose side are you on? And in primary school, right? And they're just a bit like, you know, what do I say, right? So they're being forced to think about it, even if they don't want to. It highlights why whatever you might think about your identity and how you feel about it, you don't have a choice in it.
I think that all of that resonates and sounds like the conversations that we hear at JW3 all the time. And I think that apart from hearing and seeing all of those awful anti-Semitic views that came out during that period, it was also, again, dominating the conversations, whether it was the Shabbat table or the boardroom table or particularly the Jewish press. And any time Jews or anything Jewish was being mentioned on television or in mainstream newspapers, it was only ever through one of two lenses. It was all the anti-Semitism, but it was one of two lenses. It was either Jews as the victims, so those people that felt sorry for us because we're suffering, or Jews as the, not the oppressor, but we're running a smear campaign, we control the media, we're out to get... So we couldn't really win. We weren't being seen as three-dimensional people. And that has to have an impact on how we see ourselves and how people's... You know, look, we're all of an age where we already had our kind of Jewish identity already developed and mature, okay? But generations younger than us, even 10, let alone 30 years younger than us, when their identities were being formed, if they were being formed during that era, and again, if they're being formed now, then anti-Semitism, I can imagine, is going to have a very long tail in terms of the impact on people's Jewish identity.
I agree. I actually think it's just so sad.
It's tragic.
It's just so sad because it means that the relationship with being Jewish is one of how you defend yourself or whether you tell somebody you're Jewish or what your views are on the conflict, when that's never been A, how we want to celebrate our identity and who we are, or B, what we want to put people in their teens or early 20s at universities. We don't want them to be put in that position.
One of the questions that we've sort of grappled with in trying to understand the research findings from the Jewish Identity Survey has been around the question of how to build a stronger sense of us across the Jewish community. And it strikes me that one of the things that's really quite profound about anti-Semitism is that it is able, as a sort of a byproduct of it, to pull people together. So when you think about the impact of anti-Semitism on that sense of solidarity, is there anything good in that? Is there anything problematic in it? Is it just, are you just neutral? It just is. And, you know, and how should we be should we as a community be kind of utilising it in some way in order to build a sense of the collective? Or should we absolutely not be trying to do that?
I can really only think of one day since October the 7th that I actually felt happy and proud. And it was on my way home from the March Against Antisemitism. Okay? I was amongst loads of people. I felt really, you know, part of something. I could see, and I was hearing from loads of friends and family how proud they felt to be able to do it, to stand there, to say, you know, we are a community. So that speaks to your point very well. And I think back to my university days, though, and I remember very well that there were certain people who never were going to come to a JSOC, I don't know, Hanukkah party, but they'd be up for me helping them put together a manifesto for them and coming to a trip to Blackpool to speak out about anti-Semitism because it was sort of interesting them, or it perked there, right? And I don't deny that I thought, right, well, that's my way that I'll get you involved, right? Mm-hmm. And that doesn't mean it doesn't lead to other things. So I don't think it's new. And similarly, I can think of so many people who I would never regard as activists who, I mean, I was suddenly like, what is going on? The amount of things they were suddenly saying they're involved in and doing. It was brilliant. And also just sort of, my goodness, like, where did this come from? Because this hasn't happened for however many years I've known you, right? So it's definitely touched people in a way.
Yeah, I mean, in the first episode of this series, our producer Richard made us play this really irritating game. where we had to put the different themes from this series in some sort of order, and one of the themes was anti-Semitism, and both of us, Raymond and I, both like kind of reacted quite strongly to that one and felt like we really don't want to prioritize that. We want to put it at the bottom. We want to put it to one side. We don't want Jewishness to be built on the foundations of anti-Semitism. We both, I think, also recognise that often Jewish identity Absolutely. Is built on Right. the foundations of anti-Semitism. But I think, you know, the educator in me says there's something sort of slightly kind of abusive about using anti-Semitism Yeah. as a basis from which to build Jewish identity. And I want Jewish identity to be built on family, community, values. Yeah. But the other thing I would add, and I mean, we talked about this kind of, I think, before we came on air, which was how just the whole issue of anti-Semitism is kind of overtaking our lives, and so how damaging it is from that perspective.
You know, I think none of us want to be in this situation. I don't know what else to say. None of us want to be where we are. You know, CST have just released their statistics from last year, an increase of 150% nearly. Some of the case studies, I mean, the most recent ones we've seen about a Jewish chaplain in hiding. I mean, these things are extraordinary. Mm-hmm. And they are things that if you pinch yourself, you can't quite believe this is what is happening. But in the end, we are where we are. And we are in a battle. And I think we can't ignore it. We have to fight it. You know, anti-Semitism might not be what we want to be, what defines us as Jews. But right now, I think it is the front and foremost of what we are all dealing with on a daily basis when we're looking at our phones, when we're looking at our television screens, when we're on social media. It's just there. So we have to face it, confront it, and do something about it.
So I think that's a very powerful way to end. Karen, thank you so, so much for coming in today. We really, really appreciate your time, and you've given us a lot to think about.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Powerful and at points kind of depressing.
Sobering.
Yeah, sobering. That's a better word. There's someone who is at the...
on the coal face.
Yeah, really, really is, and who gets a lot of anti-Semitic abuse herself. And I think what we hear is that it can't help but impact on one's Jewish sense of self. I struggle with this at the moment because one of the things that I've long thought, and you know this from our conversations off air, that sometimes the fear of something is worse than the thing itself.
Yeah.
And I've often thought that. I know anti-Semitism is real, and I know there's real numbers and data and incidents, but I often think we whip ourselves up into the fear and that that's worse. And I kind of think recently that maybe that's not the case, and actually it is the actual anti-Semitism itself. And I struggle with that at the moment. And I struggle with in that fantastic, fascinating conversation with Karen, how this is an issue that is shaping people's Jewish identity. And as we said in that conversation, our identities are a bit more mature, they're a bit more formed. But those that are younger than us, what happens to them? What happens to them, and how much this is going to be the defining factor of their Jewish identity?
Yeah, no, I'm also troubled by that. But I'm struck by that comment you made about the distinction between perceptions and experiences, yeah. Because I think the data, not from necessarily from this most recent study, but from, I think, a lot of research that we've done over the years on anti-Semitism, is there is a distinction between those two things. So I think that's important. And I think it's also important to kind of, you know, acknowledge that Britain has long been very much kind of at the bottom of that, of the list, the least anti-Semitic kind of countries in the world. I don't want to overstate that, because it's clear that there's something going on at the moment, and, you know, and what's happened post October the 7th has unleashed something that is deeply, deeply disturbing. And when you talk to someone like Karen, who's, as he said, like very much on the coalface, you see how much is out there and how much is impacting people. We need to draw it to a close, but let me ask you the question that we asked Karen, which was, where do you see a sense of hope at the moment?
Well, as always, I think I look through a very specific lens, and it's about the communal, the community, the togetherness. So I've seen those moments of solidarity where people are linking arms, sometimes literally. I've seen Jews that haven't really been outing themselves Jewishly, who have been outing themselves. But it's about the what we do together.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that if we can capture that feeling of we're in this together, and I don't mean in this anti-Semitism, I mean in this community together. If we can capture that and use it post this period, when anti-Semitism dips down again, as it inevitably will, then I feel positive. I feel that we can build stronger community by carrying on that feeling of there's more that we have in common than that which divides us, even within the community.
Yeah. So if you'd asked me the question, I think I would have answered very similarly. There's something about the solidarity that we can see at the moment that is shaped by anti-Semitism. And one of the key challenges, I think, for us is how do we bottle that and utilise it for good going forward. We need to draw this to a close.
Yep.
As ever, a real pleasure having the conversation with you, and obviously really, really grateful to Karen Pollock for coming in and sharing her thoughts.
So what are we going to be having a conversation about next week, John?
Well, actually, we're really picking up on this theme of solidarity and togetherness, because we're going to have a conversation about Jewish peoplehood.
Oh, great.
And how we come together, which, of course, was your top priority in the game that we played in the first episode. So we're going to be looking at that theme, and we've got a brilliant guest coming to join us. So please do join us.
And please share the podcast, and don't forget to leave us a review. We love 5 stars, but whatever you think is right, it really does help. This podcast is brought to you by JPR and JW3. Our producer is Richard Myron from Earshot Strategies. And so it's goodbye from me, Raymond Simonson.
And from me, Jonathan Boyd. See you next week.